Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast. We've got a new show for you. I'm your host, Richard Reddy, but my friends call me Spanners, so let's be friends. We're an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed. With the kind permission of our better halves, we aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. I'm joined in the shed by Matt Two Rumpets. How's it going, Matt?
I'm currently wondering if all Red Bull drivers secretly dream of Helmut Marko, or just some of them.
Dreams or nightmares? I'm also joined by young Chris Stevens. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Spanners. As the YouTube viewers will see, I got a haircut, and you're probably going to tell me it's still too long.
Yeah, and there is a tradition amongst British schoolboys, at least, of every time you get a haircut, you get yelled at and called stupid. It does look stupid. 100%. We're also joined by YouTuber and up-and-coming TikTok sim racing star, Scott Tuffy, a.k.a. Stuffy. How's it going, Stuffy?
Hey, Spanners. Thanks for having me. And I don't see the hype in Yuki Tsunoda and think he's lucky to have a contract renewal.
I invite you here to my shed, a guest in my home, and this is how you repay me. Let's argue about that now as we catch up with all the big, dirty news. Big, dirty news. All right, Matt, what's the skinny on Tsunoda?
Well, I love this story because it brings up so many really important questions to Formula One. But the simple, obvious one has just been made for us by Stuffy. Did he deserve his contract renewal? Are there better options out there? Which means we should probably do a little discussing of that to start.
All right, that's an interesting one to start with, to say, well, was he better than other options out there? And I think they quite publicly were courting the other option of Colton Herta, but that was for in anticipation of losing Pierre Gasly, I presume.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to also, you can't directly compare. Say if you thought Yuki Tsunoda and Esteban Ocon were exactly the same, you would stay with kind of the driver you had, wouldn't you? It's like a relationship. There's a tax on bothering to get out of that toxic relationship and moving on.
Yeah, I'd suggest maybe you see your eye doctor too, because they are slightly different sizes. But
I may have used Ocon to provoke you, but I am really surprised by how negative the reaction has been. And I guess I'm in a little Yuki Tsunoda echo chamber in my own head, where I was like, oh yeah, brilliant. He's going to get like a proper and continued shot. Chris?
The real question to ask, though, is for Red Bull, who are the other candidates? they've already made it plainly clear that they have no faith in the plethora of Formula 2 drivers that they have at the moment.
That means
by
many.
Already scouting Colton Herta to replace Pierre Gasly rather than one of their juniors. So it just makes sense to keep Tsunoda on for another season.
I think it makes sense. So I guess that's the end of the debate. No need to hear from Stuffy. Okay, Stuffy, why? I like Yuki Tsunoda. I think he's fast. I think he's got talent. But you're about to hurt my feelings. On you go.
Having being fast and being talented is not good enough. The best drivers perform well. They're brilliant. Max Verstappen, Lewis Hamilton. But the reason they're so good is because how bad they perform. Their bad days, they still pick up results. Now, you can argue F1's a bit different to other sports because it's dependent on their machinery. But the best of the best perform well still on their bad days. And I think when you break it down and you actually look at Yuki's performances, yes, he's had flashes of brilliance. He's had some real good results. But then he's always followed them up with really poor performances. Not just races, but weekends in general, crashes, spins. And I think he's fortunate with other circumstances happening in F1 at the moment, with Red Bull, with AlphaTauri, that he has got an extension. So that's why I think he's lucky to be there.
But obviously, as you say, the performance is not the be-all and end-all. Obviously, when Tsunoda first started in Formula 1, AlphaTauri made it quite plain that they were not happy with how he was treating himself off the circuit in regards to his discipline when it came to fitness or putting in, you know, the hours away from the track as well, you know, moving him from Milton Keynes, the sort of Red Bull Junior hub, and into their own town in Faenza in Italy, so that they could sort of more closely monitor him and get him on a regime. And it seems like they've made progress in that area. And in terms of the speed, he seems to be a lot more sort of on par with Pierre Gasly. I think there's been a lot more of a to and a fro between the two of them this season. Gasly's maybe 10 points ahead in the championship, but he had like one really good result in Baku this year. Otherwise, they've been so much more closely matched than, say, last season.
Matt, quickly, then Stuffy. Sorry.
Yeah, so just to get down to some borderline facts, we've got Tsunoda out-qualifying Gasly 6 times already this season. At the halfway mark, I think it was races 8 to Gasly, 5 for Tsunoda. And his best result should have been a 6 in Azerbaijan, but he had that DRS problem that caused him to DNF. And actually, since then, he's picked up another DNF, the one race at Zandvoort when he outqualified Gasly after the break. He had a DNF there as well. So in terms of a second-year driver going against someone who's as experienced and, I don't know, reputational perhaps as Gasly, it doesn't seem like, big picture, he's doing all that terribly.
Yes, Duffy.
Yeah, and I've seen the Gasly argument come up, but Yuki hasn't scored any points in the last 10 races. He hasn't scored a point since Miami. He's crashed by coming out of the pits. He's had 5 reprimands now this season, gaining him a grid place penalty to start at the back of grid at Monza, where he could have had potential of scoring points there, like Pierre. And since the summer break, Pierre has actually scored 3. He's actually scored 2 out of the 3 races. So it seems like Pierre, they've either done something to the car or Pierre's come back refreshed after the summer break and actually got up further the grid where you expect him to be. And I think going back to the circumstances, I think he's been given a bit of a bye out of his second year because of the regulation changes and because of the flashing performances that he had at the first season. Mm. This is almost his first season again. And then you've got the Honda affiliation as well with Porsche deal falling through. And as you guys said, there isn't really anyone to step up into that position because Gasly is still a little bit in flux in regards to what's going to happen with him. So
I agree. He needs to sort of tidy up the act ever so slightly. But Red Bull, when they were looking at Colton Herta, also made it quite plain that they'd rather have a very fast driver that was a bit rough around the edges that they could smooth out rather than taking someone that was maybe not as fast, because it's harder to make them faster.
Yeah.
It's easier to smooth out the edges. And Tsunoda is in that same boat, I think.
What are they looking for? You have to think, what are Red Bull looking for? Are they looking for like a solid number two? So in the Red Bull seat, looking at Perez, Stuffy, they wanted a solid number two. And you know, we'll argue next whether they've got one. But with Toro Rosso, that's a breeding ground for this, for raw talent, isn't it?
They're looking for cheaper parts on their Honda engine.
Sure. And of course, that's part of it.
But it's, yeah, you do have to argue what are they looking for. But I think other rookies and other drivers have been treated worse for better performances. And especially for Red Bull, I think it's just circumstantial that he's got another year. And I maybe it's the TV editing as well, but it just seems like that he's always spinning or crashing. And yeah, if he improves next year, I'm happy to say, look, he's massive. Not necessarily hold my hands up, because I still have my opinion of that he's still overhyped. But if he improves next year, fair play to him. But last year is definitely last chance saloon, I think.
Matt?
Well, this is what I love, because I'm become, as you know, a bit of a bit on the issue of how drivers are portrayed in the media and how we perceive them based on that, particularly what's featured on television. Mm. And if I would bet dollars to donuts, if you went back and looked at when Tsunoda was on television, it was whenever there was a problem, a crash, or a penalty, and never, almost never, when he had actually a good result. Partly, I think that's because AlphaTauri have missed the mark in terms of their potential as a team, so they are rarely going to get the kind of TV time that like a Mercedes or a Ferrari get, or a Red Bull. But also because if you're a driver in that end of the Formula One ecosystem, you either have to do something extraordinary or something disastrous to get any coverage at all. And it shapes our perceptions of these drivers and their talent as a result.
What was interesting to me was the quote from Helmut Marko saying, oh, well, you need to give a driver three seasons to see how they go. Now, this seems like a complete U-turn. Bearing in mind how they treated the likes of Jaime Alguersuari and Sebastian Buemi in the early 2010s, and Jean-Éric Vergne as well, Carlos Sainz. There have been so many amazing drivers that they just threw into the wind because they didn't perform like that.
Was that not a Franz Tost quote? Not a Marco quote?
It was. I may have incorrectly attributed to that. Okay. Tost would be talking sense there. But even so, he's really supposed to reflect the Red Bull philosophy. And if Red Bull are agreeing to it, then I still think it's a U-turn.
Was this post or pre-Porsche deal collapse?
Oh, post. It was when Tsunoda was in there.
My goodness.
Formula One is the most cynical sport going. So I'm not saying that's the be-all and end-all of ways that he's a contract renewal. It is obviously... He's got a likable personality, and I like to think he's definitely got a good PR team. He's a pocket rocket. He's fiery, and the media like that. But I think when you break down his results, yes, there's a case of he's fast. He's got potential, but other drivers have been let go for less.
And you wouldn't want a driver that it was just fast, but was then like crashing into the senior team driver who was spinning off everywhere, who was running people off the road. You know, those kind of drivers at Toro Rosso never went on to be world champions, did they? Like Verstappen. I'm talking about Max Verstappen. Max Verstappen displayed flashes of brilliance that everyone loved, but he was wild. He was absolutely... If you think Tsunoda was wild, go back and rewatch the early seasons with Verstappen. He was wild as well. But you want the guy who can step up to the tee, hit the big drives, who can hit the flop shots, who can do the fancy long putts, even if they're not consistent at first. I think you polish the rough diamond, Matt.
Yeah, and this has long been the Formula One position. You take the fastest driver, no matter how crashy they are, and you form them into the weapon that can win world championships. Now, I do start to wonder, in this day and age of cost caps and limited testing time, whether that might not be something that perhaps should be rethought. But I also took a trip into the past, and I wanted to say, as far as Tsunoda goes, and I think this explains potentially their interest in Herta as well, who's a similar style driver. He's always almost on the wrong side of controlling the car, very fast, prone to crashing. But if you look at who Red Bull has gotten rid of in the past, I just want to remind you that they got rid of Jev, Jean-Eric Vergne. They got rid of Buemi, Alguersuari. They got rid of Sainz. And then you look at who they keep. I think the Tsunoda decision starts to make a lot more sense because he's the kind of driver that they keep around.
And just to sort of underpin those other drivers, all of them, with the exception of Alguersuari, who had to quit racing due to medical reasons,
right?
All of them have accomplished amazing things in motorsport since then, in Formula E and in the World Endurance Championship primarily.
Yeah, but Alguersuari, he's doing amazing things in music.
He is,
you can go and get a DJ.
You
can go and download his album or whatever it is DJs have. But look, I'm a Tsunoda fan. I'm happy that he's going to be back on the grid next season. I think Stuffy is right. There's a lot of luck with the circumstances with that Porsche deal going through. Maybe that doesn't happen. But what I will say to my fellow Tsunoda fans hoping for a better 2023 is that this isn't even his final form. Wait until you see his true power. Okay, next, Matt's going to be wrong about Sergio Perez. Perez is next on your tick sheet, on your news sheet. He is getting a bit of a thumping suddenly out of the blue by one particular media outlet.
He certainly is. And this is something that I've been noticing, and I have a theory about it. Okay. I think we're starting to see articles and videos about stuff like this because there's not much competition for who's probably going to win the championship this season, and they still have to generate some kind of interest. And we all know from our own metrics that in the past, if we ever wanted to have a really good show, we talk about Lewis Hamilton, and then suddenly he wins a race, and suddenly our show numbers go up. So,
well, we don't deliberately make Lewis Hamilton win the race to make the show numbers go up, and it could be that we have a slight leaning Hamfosi audience. But there is a thousands of listener download difference between a Hamilton win. Come on, Hamilton. You can do it.
And we've certainly seen examples of people courting controversy for followers and stuff like that. And I think we may be at that point in the season, at least for the, I guess we're a professional media outlet, but for the pros that follow the circus, that get the media access, they still need to generate.
Yeah,
the big kids.
And as we know, like when we're doing content creation, sometimes I look back or we get comments sent to us where we go, oh, we've been quite negative for a bit. I think there might be something where when you're sitting on the sofa as an armchair fan, it is easier to get passionate about the things that are going wrong and the things that are doing badly than it is to kind of fawn. So I think, yes, there's a little bit of a clickbait element to it. But I do think sometimes journalists can get dragged into a, let's do a negative thing because it makes for more fiery content and more people click.
Yeah.
So no, anyway.
I would agree.
Yeah. What's the kicking he's getting at the moment then, Matt?
Well, if you have a look at his qualifying over the last, I don't know, 4-6 races.
No, look at the first six, please.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the point. If you pick that right sequence, and that sequence is all later in the season, he's sort of a devastatingly far amount off of Perez to an average of like close to 8 tenths, which is, even when qualifying's not that important, is still kind of important.
Yeah, so we can kind of make these comments, you know, about whether this is right or wrong, but at the end of the day, it's backed up by data. And that, to me, kind of tells at least a story, in that it was very clear Perez kind of came out guns blazing this season. But as the development of the car has gone on, and there's all these sort of conflicting rumors about whether Perez actually has what is supposed to be a better spec floor that just isn't working for him. But it is very clear that the car is moving away from him as the season progresses. And that's why we've got these sort of slightly bigger gaps. But what is really important is that Red Bull don't have that same margin over the rest of the teams, so it's dropping him behind even the Mercs at this point, and he's fighting cars he really shouldn't be fighting.
Stuffy,
think with the Perez situation, I was quite surprised actually when you brought this topic up for the show, because I think he's the perfect number two for Red Bull. You have to look at it from Red Bull's perspective. Yes, he's tailed off in the second half of the season, but as you said, Spanners, he's come out in the first half, all guns blazing, picked up a win. He's had 5 podiums since then. I've just had a look. He's had 80 points since Monaco, and they're over 100 and so points or whatever it is ahead of Ferrari and the constructors. Now, number one is always going to be Max, and you need to look at it. Perez is doing exactly what they want. As long as he is there or thereabouts in around the top six, then he's always going to come in regards to strategy. He's going to score enough points. And if Max is up there winning or finishing second, but this year, obviously, he's phenomenal and he's finishing first pretty much every race, then there's no issue there. And I think personally, it's a clutching at straws, like you said, Spanish, for content at the moment, because there's not much else to talk about.
Thank you, Maria, in the live chat. You can back anything up with numbers. That's right, Chris. Statistics, and damn lies.
But I agree with you on that, because I think statistics is utterly, utterly useless.
Look, in this specific case, I will just sort of, obviously, you guys know that I'm a Perez fan, so you can take that in the context of that. But he clearly started off the season very well. The car suited his driving style. Max Verstappen said it didn't suit his at all. And in fact, you know, we were even saying on this show, you know, this could be a bit of a headache for Red Bull. If you're Mercedes or Ferrari and Perez is coming through ahead of Verstappen, let Perez through. But that problem very quickly went away. They've been very public about this, Red Bull. They've hidden none of this. They have said out loud after signing Perez on for a contract, by the way, before the Monaco Grand Prix. They're clearly very happy with him. They said the car wasn't suiting Verstappen. They changed it towards how Verstappen drives. And that's perfectly understandable. I would 100% always have a number one driver. Verstappen's the number one driver. You develop it towards his path. And whatever they've done, it definitely seems to have worked. And it's not a coincidence that that's coincided with then Perez taking a downward dip in form. They very publicly talked about having different floors. And you can speculate if that's a conspiracy about Perez trying out different floors or not. But it's very clear that if they have a good upgrade, it goes to Verstappen first. So I do feel like the gunning for Perez ignores the fact that he came out of the blocks in the season looking pretty much, you know, on par or much, much closer than he was in previous seasons and much, much closer than previous teammates. But especially in this budget cap era, towards the middle of a season, you are going to throw things at a number one driver. And that, to me, Matt, is the absolute, definite, most sensible way to go about stuff. But then slating Perez, when you can see that the changes in development on the graph exactly coincide with the drop in form, is intellectually dishonest.
And, you know, far be it for me to point out that Albon was never this far away from Verstappen in qualifying. And everything you say is true. The floor is reportedly worth a tenth, but it might be costing Perez more if it's making things unstable and robbing him of confidence. We don't know the technical details. And yeah, this is very much, I think, a tempest in a media teapot that we're discussing. But there's also that smoke fire saying, and I do want to bring this up because by all accounts, Red Bull are developing the car not just to suit Max better, but because it's how the car itself is fastest around a racetrack. And if they start next season with the car in this order and with Perez this far off, with Ferrari and Mercedes potentially having made those gains, then it's not an issue now.
Yeah.
But it might bear watching for the future if he doesn't figure out how to close back up to sort of that 3 or 4 tenths that you'd expect a driver of his caliber to be able to maintain against Verstappen.
Okay, quick defense, because I know Stuffy's got a point here, but quick defense on that is that obviously they turn up to preseason, they're testing in a car. Perez is like, this is mint. I'm all over this. And then, you know, post Monaco, it starts to change and go away from him. But so, you know, before 23, he's going to have another preseason to get into it. But, you know, F1's a career game. You've got to get yourself into the position to be that number one driver so they develop towards you. Perez seems happy. Red Bull seem happy. The only people that aren't happy is whoever wrote that. Anyway, Stuffy.
I think it's motivation as well. That's a massive factor. He's, as you, all the points you've made, Matt, the car's development has got further away from him. He's probably seen that internally. We don't know what goes on behind closed doors. And Max is so far ahead in the championship now. They're so far ahead in the constructors. There's no, what motivation is there for him apart from just going out there and just enjoying driving a Formula One car for the rest of the season? We will see probably a different Perez at the start of next season where it's level, well, however much you think it's a level playing field in Red Bull, not. But level playing field in the start of next season. And as well, to touch on your point about the career game, F1,
yeah.
Perez isn't going to move of his own accord.
No.
Because he's, where's he going to move to? He's never going to make a sideways step to Ferrari and Mercedes. This is his best opportunity to ever fight for a world championship. Next year, Max may get a lot of bad luck and have a load of reliability issues. Then Perez is number one. So that's his, unless Red Bull decide to get rid of him, Perez will be at that team for as long as he wants to be.
Verstappen could Rosberg it and go, two. That's pretty good. All right. I'm off to be an incredibly just rich entrepreneur and go off and do whatever I want. But look, we've seen in the past, that in the live chat, lots of people are saying you should be adaptable. You should be able to adapt and drive to the car. I think there's a fair point in that. I don't know whether it's better to have a driver that is adaptable or a driver that is really, really good at a specific type of car. I don't know. Maybe it's like sprinter versus heptathlete. So, for example, Kimi Raikkonen was doing very well until the Pirelli era. You can look at teammates of Lewis Hamilton who started off much closer to him in overall pace than they were towards the end of their stint because the car was being developed probably towards Lewis Hamilton, you could argue, with Rosberg and with Valtteri Bottas as well. So I think, yes, you can say, well, we'll just adapt to whatever the car is there, but clearly teams seem to favour a driver and then develop towards them. Chris?
Well, the adaptability for me is absolutely key because you see drivers like, I'm just going to use Lewis Hamilton as an example, who has been at the front of the Formula One field all the way from 2007 to, well, pretty much now, save for a couple of years with dog cars, and even then managed to drag them into results they didn't really deserve. And from then we've seen aero changes, suspension changes, tire changes, hybrid changes, you know, all sorts of different things. Whereas Sebastian Vettel, all of his success came in one very specific era of the sport, which he was amazing at. No one was better at him than driving those blown diffuser cars. But you see, as soon as he got rid of it, he couldn't do what he needed to do and struggle to adapt and recreate the same success. So and for me, the adaptability is crucial.
It is. And whilst I'm not arguing that Vettel is not better than Lewis Hamilton, Lewis Hamilton was also very quickly favoured at McLaren. They weren't developing the car for Kovalainen, were they? And I think that might have been slightly offset with Button, because I think Button was probably pretty good at playing the political game, and he had 2011 where he definitely had the measure of Lewis Hamilton whilst Lewis Hamilton was off doing whatever he was doing between races. And then at Mercedes, I would argue that Mercedes have always seen him really as their number one and have always developed towards him. So having your team develop towards you, I think, is as big an advantage as the era suiting you or the regs suiting you. All right, good. Anyway, I think we've covered that, have we, Matt? We've got with some dotted some I's there. Do you want to cross some T's?
I was just going to, I mean, if you want to get into the development thing a little bit, I could
do.
Talk
Let's
about
do
that.
It. Yes.
Oh, gosh. Oh, you are so...
Well, it gives me a... It gives
I've
me
tripped
a,
you again.
It gives me a break. So that's okay. I'm going to... I've poured a Merlot, so crack on.
Well, one of our listeners has asked, do the teams develop the car or do they... For the engineers or for the drivers? And I think the answer to that is they develop it most. The engineers develop the car for the engineers. They look at the data and they just then they look at where the tires scrub, where and they figure out what they need the car to do in order for the car to go faster. Sometimes it needs to be better on the tires. Sometimes the balance needs to move backwards or forwards. And we know that the balance thing is something that Red Bull has chased, and they've chased it because they want better tire degradation curves, and they've achieved that. But the result of chasing that has done two things. One, it's brought the car into focus better for Verstappen than Perez. And two, it has made this disparity between the driving styles of Perez and Verstappen really obvious to people in a way that it was less so earlier in the season.
Mm.
And the problem you have is if for Red Bull's aero concept, where they have gone with this car is where they're going to continue to go, then this is the point where the team has to also figure out how to adapt the car so Perez can maximize it. And I think that's what we've not seen yet from the team.
I know what this is. I know what you're doing. I know what this is. This is all going back to you thinking that I was overharsh on Alexander Albon at his time at Red Bull. And this, you feel like this is all your big aha moment and that you think they should reinstate Albon.
I don't think we should reinstate Albon. I think he's much happier at Williams, and I think Williams will be much better next season.
Oh, it's going to be a good...
I think they will be fighting with other teams for places in the championship.
Might be a good little team, that, wouldn't it?
If you want my prediction. I like Albon, and I think it's better for him to be out of that Red Bull loop. But I would say you are correct. I do think that the job Perez is doing could have been done by Albon as well. All yes.
Right. Chris?
My last point on this, if you see more than a second between teammates, that is not down to the drivers. That is down to something
like McLaren.
In Formula One is a second slower.
Should we caveat that? Stuffy, yeah. Go on.
Unless it's Williams and your name's Nicholas Latifi.
Don't you dare. I'm already heartbroken.
Sorry. He's a big Latifi fan.
You forget.
Really?
Yeah, you don't know the story. It's because
you must have been a big fan of the memes. That's the only reason why.
No. It was at F2 that you had some FaceTime with him?
He drove for the team I worked for in Formula 2.
Hang on. We'll get to... Actually, Latifi's a little good segue. We'll go into Latifi. But I think you're right. When you see two, talented drivers and the gap is that big, it probably isn't just down to pure talent. So like McLaren and Ricciardo, very clearly something hasn't been going right there. Ricciardo isn't that far off of, I've said this before, of Norris. If you put them in a range of, I don't know, street stocks, a radical, if you put them in a range of cars, I doubt that the gap would be that big. Something odd has happened, some circumstance.
Put him back in the Alpine, he'd be much closer.
Yeah, well, there you go. And I'm starting to form a theory of McLaren and how embedded Norris is into the DNA of McLaren. I'm getting some nods from Chris.
Oh, man.
Bring it on.
No, Piastri has got his hands full next season. I think if there was a rookie driver better equipped to take onto it, it was Oscar Piastri. But for sure, he's walking into Norris's camp.
Yeah, no, I'm forming that theory still. I just wanted to go with Stuffy because he's the best racer here between the lot of us. on the thing of adaptability, moving between different, cars, and people don't like it when I equate sim racing, but you just get off your high horse. Sim racing is a skill in of itself. And I've heard a lot of real world drivers say that it's incredibly useful to them in practice and they can get a feel for stuff. But jumping between different cars, do you find that your driving style makes a big difference or even holds you back?
100%. Yeah. What Nick De Vries did at Monza was so impressive because I've never had the luxury of racing in real life.
Don't apologize. You're glorious for who you are.
So the only thing I had to compare it to is jumping from different cars on iRacing, which is as close to being in a real life car as you can without actually being in one. And yes, jumping from a Formula 3 car to Formula 1 or GT3, they're also very different. And it's very noticeable how they handle and how different you have to drive them. And it takes a good few laps to get into it. I could not just jump from race to race if I wanted to, because I would just end up causing myself so many issues and crashing into people.
I even find that if you just change the setup, I'd have to learn it all from scratch. And I'm not a professional racing driver. I do things kind of like a paint by numbers. So I go, if I broke there and I was in too slow, so I'll break a little bit later next time. Oh, I turned there, that didn't quite work, turn a little bit next time. That's probably why I'm not a professional racing driver.
It gives you a real appreciation to how hard it must be in real life. And a real appreciation to the junior drivers who win consecutive formulas, i.e. Piastri, George Russell, because they're going from such different cars. And it's not like they can jump into that car and run hundreds and hundreds of laps before they do a race, because the regulations state they can't do that. So, I mean, it just gives you a full appreciation to them, and hats off to Nyck de Vries, because that was just phenomenal.
So speaking to our pro driver, Brad Philpott, and when, you know, he's coaching me a bit on a sim or whatever, I'll say to him, well, where did you break at turn three? And he goes, I don't know. And to me, I go, what? How can you not know? Like, I'm looking at those marker boards going 100, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, break. And that's how I kind of work my way through a lap. And he is just feeling by looking at the corner and sensing the conditions, how to get around that corner. So yeah, it will be very interesting to have a deep dive with someone about instinctive racing, perhaps, and maybe a more kind of learned style, which I think a lot of people said Nico Rosberg was really into the numbers, studying the graph, studying the data, Chris, to get up to Lewis Hamilton's raw lap times.
100%. I think we see quite a lot of drivers. I think Mick Schumacher, well, taking after his father, really, was exactly like that, where, okay, yeah, but for Michael Schumacher back in the day, you could do 1,000 laps at a test circuit between every single Grand Prix if you wanted to. But it was going back, giving the feedback, looking at the data, what did we change? Okay, let's do another 50 laps and see how it goes. And it's those kind of little details, rather than just kind of jumping in and knowing exactly where you are pretty much straight away. But so long as the end product is roughly similar, it doesn't really matter how you get from A to B.
Mm. So I won't risk any more sim racing chat to upset people. But if you do want to see Stuffy's stream, I do recommend you go and check it out. The links will be in all the show notes below. And what I love, Stuffy, is how you're going through your stream and you're talking through the races, and it is all so calm. I've tried, and I don't think I can do what you do, because my head, I go from flash to bang so quickly that my iRacing streams would just be an X-rated affair. But you're effortless as you're talking through your race.
I try to. I used to be very angry on the golf course growing up, I've calmed down as I've got older. But you clearly missed my stream last night. I really got the ump with the track. I crashed out myself. But yes, I'm doing F1 watch-alongs now as well, which is
you're a direct competitor. Okay, Matt, don't put his links in the show.
No. Missed Apex banner down below. You know, it's ripping the MA crew. So it's good fun.
That is such an amazing skill. And Spanners, do you remember when Brad at the karting event? This was a couple of years ago now, when we could talk to him in the middle of the race. And he was just so calm, just like, oh, yeah, I'm going to pass Van Gene now. And he would do it.
Yeah, and that's why I would love to hear more in-car stuff. And we got a good email about the in-car stuff. I think I might address that midweek. But sorry, Chris, let's segue to the thing you're sad about. Oh, Chris, I think you're the one person I know that genuinely was rooting for Latifi. The journey is officially coming to an end now. I don't think there's another seat for him. I think most people are of the opinion that he wasn't up to scratch for the pinnacle of Formula One. But you did keep, through all that time, finding little glimmers of hope, like an FP1 session or something, and you would be leaping on it. Did you truly believe that there was some F1 level talent there to be unlocked?
Not pinnacle F1, no. I think Nicky got a bit of a bad rep, but not many people know about this weird mystery illness when Formula 2 changed cars in, what was it, 2018. He missed all the testing. So he was really on the back foot back then. And about halfway through the season, he started to sort of kick into gear, and it was all sort of coming together. So he was in F2 maybe a year longer than he should have been. But and then when 2019 hit, and he just kind of came out of the ground running, winning 3-4 weekends in a row. And although he ultimately lost the title, I did think, okay, maybe, you know, there is actually something there. I never thought he was going to go and fight for a world championship or anything like this, but I wanted him to do well. And I was always rooting for him to make a development and to push on and to do something good. And I'm sure he's still going to have a great career in motorsport. I think he could have the pick of pretty much any world endurance championship seat he wanted, for example, and go and do Le Mans.
Stuffy.
Latifi, or Go Tifi, as he's commonly referred to, is going to go down in legends with names such as Raghunathan and Pastor Maldonado.
No, because Raghunathan was like shutting his eyes in high-speed corners. At least the TV actually made it to F1.
Maybe that's why he crashed so often, Chris. He was shutting his eyes through corners.
Yeah.
But Latifi, the nail in the coffin for him was Nick De Vries. De Vries jumped into that car at Monza. Okay, a track where the Williams was going to be stronger than his rounds, higher downforce tracks. But for someone to jump in the circumstances like they did and to take it to an eighth position in a fighting pack as well, it wasn't like he was running out on his own the whole race. In the manner that he did, just showed, I think, to the bosses of Williams that we've actually got a car that can pick up points here. We've got Alex Albon, who's had a few good results for us. If we had that second car fighting up with him, the strategy calls we could make and the potential points they could have got.
Yeah.
As you said at the start of the show, Spanners, I think we could see a good Williams next year, depending on who the driver is they bring in, because there's a few rumors on who they're going to bring in. So,
yeah, and I think we'll talk about that. But I do need to point out that of all the Williams drivers, it is indeed Latifi with the highest points.
Oh, don't do this.
In recent history, and there's no denying that. And
statistics.
I do want to get on board with Chris a little bit in that, like, I look at his performance, and his performance in Formula One doesn't match my expectations. And I expect there is some kind of a reason for it. I think that reason is probably very confidence related. Mm-hmm. And that in the end of days, he wound up with a car he just couldn't drive to its maximum performance for whatever reason. And I never got the sense that he was anything other than tolerated at Williams, and that might indeed, you know, be a part of it.
Why I really wanted Nicky to do well was just that he was a genuinely nice guy. You know, the son of a billionaire, you would expect a bit of attitude, a bit of ego. There was none of that with Nicky at all, or at least when, you know, when he was in Formula 2. And he was just like one of the few people in the team that was happy to see me at Silverstone, for example, because the team are just like, well, what are these media people doing? They're the PR people, the social media. God, what a waste of time. We just want to make the car quicker. Whereas Nicky was actually taking the time to say hello and get to know us and, you know, was kind of happy to see us.
Is your whole Latifi defense based on like, are you hungry, Chris? I've got a bit of leftover sandwich, and he's giving you a bit of leftover sandwich. Oh, chewed pastrami, my favorite. Like, you can't base that all on that he was a bit nice to you.
Whoa, hold on. No, I can like whoever I like for whatever reason.
No, I'm gatekeeping.
I've never sat
this.
Here and said, I've said it jokingly, but I've never genuinely said that he's the best driver in the world or anything. Yeah. I just wanted him to do well.
Stuffy.
It's a very similar, not you, Chris. Obviously, there's personal reasons why you wanted Nicky to do well. And I think most of the time, depending on, unless it's Nikita Mazepin, I think most of us want drivers to come into Formula One and do well in some respect. But it's very similar sentiments to Daniel Ricciardo. He's a lovely guy. People are so sorry to see him go, but he hasn't performed for the last 3-4 years. Same as Nicholas Latifi. Okay, arguments, he didn't have a strong car to even fight in the midfield when he was against George Russell. But unless George made a serious mistake, he never beat him. And then Albon's come in, and then the Nick De Vries situation. It's new American owners as well, new ownership. They've clearly seen, we don't need that money anymore that he brings. And we're going to take a different approach.
You see, Stroll had it better at Williams, didn't he? He had Sorokin to kind of cut his teeth against, and that he had a bit more of a kind of an easy path. To be fair to Latifi, he had Russell and then Albon and then Nick De Vries. So they're like genuine talents up against him. But I think, you know, that has highlighted the golf. And you go, well, okay, he's a genuine buy-in driver, and Williams were a team that needed a buy-in driver. And I don't think they're that team anymore. I don't think any of the teams are going to be that anymore. So it sort of makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know, like you said, Stuffy, that De Vries was the nail in the coffin, because I think we all know, and the team know, Latifi was there for a reason, which was more financial support than for driver talent. And unless there was that reason, the need for that money was no longer there because they found it elsewhere, then they were always going to need him for that reason. So clearly somewhere along the way this season, or maybe it is just a change in mindset. I don't know, but they've clearly, you know, found a reason to not need his money anymore.
I'm going to put Stuffy's Twitter handles. Are your DMs open, Stuffy?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Brilliant. Good. I'm going to put his, we'll put that, Mac, can we put it at the top? Because a lot of the chat room are pointing out that you just compared Ricardo to Latifi. So I'm just going to say DM Stuffy.
Bring it.
DM Stuffy and not us. Sure.
I love that. I'm so happy.
Look, nice guys finish last, especially when it comes to F1. And at the end of the day, Daniel Ricciardo, his personality. I love Daniel Ricciardo. He's a great guy. He comes across really well. I love him on his Instagram stories. Like, he's funny. Yeah. But ultimately, he's not been performing. Lincoln. He's not been great. And I was gutted to see him finish the way he did at Monza, because I thought he deserved that.
Yeah.
But maybe McLaren had a secret kill button on their engine to allow Norris to finish ahead of him.
More to come. More to come on that. Trumpets.
Well, you know, I will take issue with nice guys finish last, because I think outside of competition, it's irrelevant what kind of a person you are. I've worked with people who are the best at what they do, and they're really nice people. And I've also worked with people who are the best at what they do, and they are insufferable, you know what. And so I have no problem getting behind Latifi being a genuinely nice person and wanting him to do well. But at the end of the day, the arbitrage between the money he brought to the seat and the lack of points he can now bring to Williams when they think they're on an upswing has obviously tilted against him. And that's a shame, because I think on the whole, it's good for Formula One to have nice people in the sport to help represent the sport as a whole.
There's no denying that. And it's great to see, obviously, Charles Leclerc, Max, Lando all get on well off the track. But ultimately, it comes down to lap time and if you're getting the results. And I think, Chris, you said about, oh, when did Williams make this decision? I just think their ambitions have changed. Maybe they were on a seesaw in regards to, we don't know whether to keep Latifi for his money, or do we go for a driver who can potentially take our car further up the grid where we'll get more prize money anyway. And I think Nick De Vries just basically just tilted that for them and went, yeah, we've got a car here and we need to make that decision now.
Find another F1 podcast out there that can talk this long about Nicholas Latifi. I love it.
Well, it's only because you made us. So I'm not coming on unless we do at least 25 minutes on Latifi. Here's the question I really want to ask about the whole situation. Is this now the last time we're going to see a big, genuine buy-in driver contract in Formula One, where Nicholas Latifi, is my understanding, he was paying 20 million space bucks, euros, pounds, although those two things are pretty much the same. In fact, pounds, euros, dollars, pretty much interchangeable by now. Can we all just have a common currency? Is this the last time we're going to see that kind of big money buy-in driver? And I'm going to make the distinction. Not someone who's got backing, not someone who was picked up at McLaren age 10, someone who literally comes to a team and contributes more to the team out of personal money than they take in whatever nominal salary that they want to say. So I would say that Latifi and Stroll, their personal connections put more in than they take out. Because I believe Latifi gets a salary of like 800,000 or whatever. Stroll draws a salary from Aston Martin. So I would still class those as buy-in drivers. Are we going to see another big buy-in driver contract again in F1? Stuffy?
I hope not. I don't think so. I think what we're going to see now is we're going to see it's going to tilt slightly to drivers being picked on their commercial value.
Ooh, similar take.
Similar to how it is in kind of football and kind of other sports, where they bring a player in, or they bring a driver in for their commercial value and the money they can make. because of how big the sport is growing now, especially with Drive to Survive. And I think, personally, this is why Red Bull were trying to get Colton Herta, because he is an American IndyCar driver. He's known to the American fan base. And they're trying, I think, whichever team capitalizes on getting the first American driver in this new era of fan is going to bring in the big bucks, which is why Logan Sargeant is really being talked about a lot in that Williams seat, because that is a massive cash bonus they'll get from commercial. So I think it's going to swing more that way. Mm. And we're going to get people brought in for their commercial value in the regions where they're big, then necessarily here's the money for me to have that seat.
I do think we're still going to see them every now and again, because motorsport is always going to be a rich man's game. And there's always going to be these scenarios where the rich drivers, and we see it, we saw it with Stroll, we saw it with Latifi, we saw it with Mazepin, where they find themselves in a good enough team that is going to elevate them to a high enough position in the championship to get the necessary super license points. And at some point, a team will need that money.
Yeah. Well, right. Okay. But I don't think they would elevate themselves to the point where an F1 team would want to pay them money. So I don't think if paid driving, if buying at your seat wasn't a thing, no one was going to look at Latifi or Stroll in their junior careers and say, okay, I'm going to pay you a wage to drive for our team. So they are still out and out buying drivers. And there's lots of people saying, yes, rich man's sport, like you were saying, Chris, in the live chat, that it will always happen because money talks. However, with only 20 seats on the grid and it becoming a closed shop franchise, I would imagine now that there is pressure from within the FIA and FOM to say, look, no, let's not do these buy-in drivers. For example, Haas bringing in Magnussen for Mazepin. Don't tell me there wasn't some kind of FIA, FOM involvement in that.
No, well, for one, they couldn't.
I know they couldn't keep Mazepin, but why didn't they bring in a billionaire kid instead of Mazepin?
Because they already had Mazepin's money. They got to keep it.
Well, they don't have it this year. Isn't this back?
They kept it.
So next
they
season.
Kept all of it.
So next season, Magnussen's out because Magnussen's getting a wage of like 12 million or whatever.
Oh, I doubt he's on that much, but.
You sent me the list of everyone's wages.
I said no such thing.
Very surprised at what Magnussen's stated wages, which is
my
point.
All right. Anyway, I still think there's always going to be a time where a team is desperate for money and they will take a pay driver over a very good driver. It's always going to crop up.
I honestly feel like there's a drive from F1 itself to say, no, we need, this is actually, it's not, we've got the attention of the world on us now and it doesn't look good at all for us to have these buy-in drivers. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's chats with the teams when it comes to selection that no, we don't want another Latifi Mazepin. Matt, then Stuffy.
Right. So I'm going to split the baby here and say that I don't think we're going to get, you know, Solomon split the baby in half. We're not going to get the kinds of supremely untalented, incredibly rich drivers that populated bygone eras. But I tend to agree with Chris. You might see a good enough rich driver getting a drive over a better but much, much poorer driver in certain instances, which is not perfect, but, you know, I guess we could call it progress.
Yeah, I suppose you could have a driver that would say, I'm willing to drive. Okay, I know I'm the same as Derek Turnipson there, but I am actually willing to drive for 1 million instead of 10 million. Give me your seat. Stuffy.
I think you got a good point there about the American, Liberty Media is an American company and it being a closed shop. We keep hearing comments from Domenicali and other people in the FIA about their reluctance to have more than 20 cars on the grid, even though as fans, and me personally, I think there's room for 2-3 more cars. Unless that happens, I think we will start to see pay drivers become a thing of the past. It's, as I said before, more commercially driven, their commercial value. But you look at most of their sports leagues, they're all closed shops. It takes a lot for a team to buy in. I think like David Beckham's Inter Miami is the last team in kind of sport in their basketball, baseball, soccer. I know it's football, but team to come in, and he's had to pay substantial amounts of money to come in. And even though some teams like Andretti are willing to front up the money, there's still massive reluctance to bring new teams to the grid. So I think, yeah, it's going to become a closed shop where they want things run more tightly, the cost cap. And as you said, with the way, I think also with the way that the world is now as well, if a team is discovered to bring on a driver because they're fronting up X
They'll
amount
get
of money.
Booed. Yeah.
Exactly.
Twitter. So, they'll get the old thumbs down. Chris.
So this is all under the perfect scenario, which I hope will be the case, that all the teams are financially sound and healthy in the long term. Mm-hmm. But I am very cynical about that kind of future because I just think it doesn't exist. But I hope it does.
What? In a future where there might be 35 races on the calendar...
Oh, God.
There might need to be driver rotation. So who knows where we'll be looking for future talent and how many future talents we'll need.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Well, we don't want to exceed the hour, so we'd best get on with the calendar chat. But before we do, you've listened this long. It's not even a race review show, so you must think we're kind of okay. I'm going to ask you a favour. If you go to the URL, that's an internet term, www.missedapex.net, you can even just type in missedapex.net, and your browser's clever, and it will bring you to our homepage. And that there, you can click a YouTube link and start watching our faces, or you can click an audio link and see if you like the show, and then you can go and subscribe. What I would ask is, just please, tell, you're our secret weapon, you're our advertising budget. If you could just tell one other person in your world, WhatsApp someone, hey, if you are looking for an F1 show, check out missedapexpodcast.net, or just post it on your social media. Even if you've got 2 Facebook friends and 3 followers on Twitter, this is the kind of ground level word of mouth that we rely on. You're our secret weapon. You've boosted us up in the iTunes charts recently. Thank you so much to everyone who left us 5-star reviews on iTunes. We've had probably about 50 or 60 since the last show worldwide. When I asked people to leave a 5-star review, they've all been lovely and great for morale. So leave a great iTunes review and just tell one friend that if they want an F1 podcast, I nearly said iRacing because I'm looking at Stuffy there, but if they want an F1 podcast, they should check out Missed Apex Podcast at missedapexpodcast.net. Just one person, please, even if it's Derek, one person. Okay, interesting chat, Matt, about the calendar. There's a lot of races on there, 24 races, and maybe it'll turn out to be 23. But even just personally, you and I, as F1 podcasters, we've been kind of going, ooh. I mean, even though we will do a show every Sunday, come rain or shine.
Yeah.
The race reviews are a different animal. And
yes.
We already have squad depth, so we can rotate our panel. You and I can switch. We are going to have a substitute host on Missed Apex yep. podcast for two shows this season, which I'm very excited about. Obviously, you do your tech times as well. Chris can morph into Matt and get a feeling of what it would be like to be 50X years old. And we can adapt. There's a lot of podcasts out there that only do F1 race reviews. For them, that's going to be a bit of a shock. I know one podcast that started out when there was only 16. And they would do 16 shows a year. Now they're looking at 24. And that's just from a podcast point of view, from the team's point of view, staff point of view, viewing point of view, from the view of every single person that gets a side-eye look from their spouse when they say, I'm going to watch 3 days of Formula One. Yes, there is another Grand Prix weekend. No, the season hasn't finished yet. Yes, the season has started already. It's a lot. I thought I wanted infinite F1 races, and I am being tested.
Well, you know, we're getting to interesting territory. I mean, for me, I always look at the calendar and I look for the number separations. Is there a week between races? And I'm looking at the month of July right now. There is a race every single weekend, and I'm just despairing. I am despairing that I will survive that month with my faculties intact. Although, to be fair, China is listed as provisional right now, and there's a good chance if they do not open the country back up that we will once again not be racing there. But it's a lot. It's a grind on the personnel. It's a grind on the teams, the logistics, the environmental impacts. I mean, these things all really do get factored in. And but the big problem, I think, the biggest problem is dilution. At what point do you have so many races that it's not a special event? It's not something that you can tell the rest of your family, it's my special thing, I get to go do this. And they're like, well, yeah, it was your special thing at 16 races, but now we're at X races. And so you don't get that anymore.
Yeah, I've made my feelings about the calendar expansion pretty clear over the years. And I always get the comment saying, like, oh, you're not a proper F1 fan if you don't want more races. And like, no, yeah, you can have Chris. Too much of a good thing. You can have too much of a good thing. It is absolutely possible, to the point where, like, even after we came back from the summer break and we had three races in a row, I was fatigued just watching them. And it because it's an effort, you know, and you get bored of it after a while, even if it's something you're incredibly passionate about. But I think
that's too much. I'm not bored of it.
But
I'm just saying this a lot.
What I would love to see as well is an approach of quality over quantity. I think we can all agree there are a good five races we would happily get rid of from the current calendar.
Monaco,
not miss them at all. No, not Monaco.
Okay, I tell you what, we'll do that. We'll do that in a little while. That's quite fun. Stuffy, 24.
I think we're going to have to get used to it, because I think there's going to be one added next year, and there'll be one probably the year after. I think there's 52 weeks in a year, and I fully expect them to take up half of the year with races. I totally agree with Chris. Quality over quantity. But the big thing I'm looking at in regards to this calendar is the spread over the world. Some of it doesn't make sense to me. We've got three races in America. We've got Miami in May. We've got COTA in October. And then we've got the last two races of the year is Vegas and Abu Dhabi. That's a night. There's a week in between them. And that's a 19-hour flight that I've Googled there. Logistically, it doesn't make sense. And as fans, some of us will be sitting there going, more races, the better. I've got more F1 to watch. Yeah. Some people will just watch the races. They won't necessarily be into it all over the weekend, like, say, we are.
True.
But what about the people who actually work in F1? What, I mean, even if I was single and I was young, I'd be sitting there going, Jesus, that's a lot of traveling I've got to do. It's stressful enough going on holiday, let alone doing that 26 times a year.
Let's have no more talk of sympathy for them. They are living their dreams and they will dance for our pleasure and entertainment. Of course, that is a very serious topic. We might get to that in a second. Chris?
I mean, not to mention testing well. Two pre-season tests, one post-season test, maybe even a mid-season tyre test as well if they go back to doing things like that as well. And, you know, you're absolutely right. This expansion with the spread over the year of the various continents comes after they said they were going to try and group races together so that we would have...
They grouped them together. They grouped them together between March and December.
Yeah, exactly.
Just one big lump.
I mean, thank God we're not going into December again, though, because you remember last year, it was a week before Christmas, before the season ended. Yeah. That was utterly ridiculous.
Okay, I think, look, let's look at the calendar in a little bit more detail. There's not many, like, surprises, but things like China coming back and, you know, Imola, which was kind of a stopgap race, has made itself a permanent fixture, helped by a little bit of aqua from the sky. And things like Brazil, Mexico, United States, Qatar, the Saudi race, which hasn't really been thrilling, is still on there for that season as well. And then you're finishing the season still with Abu Dhabi. But the penultimate race is Las Vegas, so that's worthy of chat as well. Stuffy.
Yeah, those last two races, when I saw the calendar come out, I don't know why. I always go to the last two, last couple of races. I don't know, maybe because I'm hoping that for 1 year now, Abu Dhabi will no longer be our last race.
That's
on the
locked
calendar.
In.
Last,
locked in.
Last year was an exception. But anyone who's joined F1 recently, Abu Dhabi is generally a snooze fest. Mm-hmm. And apart from one long straight, which is a boring overtake anyway, it's shocking to me that Brazil has been replaced as the last race of the season. And to see Vegas and Abu Dhabi, the guys have probably got the most money to chuck at Liberty Media, be the last two races of the season. Didn't impress me at all. And neither does the Vegas track that I've seen as a layout. As I saw someone on TikTok describe, if you actually look at the track map and turn it upside down, it looks like a bear.
Okay, Matt.
Well, I think Holler in our chat has made the very good point. We've talked a lot about pay drivers. Maybe we should spend a little time talking about pay tracks. And some of the tracks definitely fall into that category.
Technically, all tracks are pay tracks, Chris?
Oh, exactly. No, I mean, look, we all know that oil-rich countries are paying a fortune and an awful lot more. The reason Abu Dhabi ends the season is because they pay for it to be the end of the season and they pay for the full support package as well, which is why that we may have just ended the F3 season in Monza, but Formula 2's got to wait another 2 months before their season ends, which seems a little bit ridiculous to me. But in defense of Vegas...
Okay, let's talk. Let's talk Vegas. Yeah,
no, I will no longer judge a racetrack by the outline of this until we actually watch a Grand Prix on it. I will not judge it because for me, I really disliked the idea of the Baku circuit until I actually saw it in qualifying, and it was amazing.
What? Baku?
For qualifying, it was really thrilling. Maybe not for all the races.
It's the best in terms street of track. Qualifying. It's the best out and out street track. I'll give you that.
I would agree.
It's
with
a
that,
low bar. And it can be, you know, quite exciting in qualifying, and it's exciting if you get a late safety car or a late red flag. But honestly, the thrill and the novelty of look, it's going near a castle, that it disappears very quickly for me, Matt.
Right. So I have feelings about Baku. There are certain tracks that are random chaos generators, and that's what makes them interesting. And I think Baku absolutely falls into that. It's an exciting race because really, at any moment, any person could do something stupid and pinball half the field out and just cause utter chaos. So it's kind of a replacement for when people's engines would just randomly blow up in the middle of the race and you just never knew when that was going to happen. Fair enough. But what I really wanted to discuss about Vegas is the fact that, first of all, it's a Saturday race.
Yes.
At a very weird time, at least for those of us on the East Coast. I think it's like going to be 1:30 in the morning for us. But it's because they wanted to have the race at night because they wanted a U.S.-based equivalent of Monaco and Singapore. Liberty themselves own this race. They are the promoter of it. Prices are going to make Miami look like a pauper's dream in comparison. But the thing about Vegas, if you've never been there, and the reason why I think this is going to work, is that nothing about Vegas, like when you're in the casino, like where this is going to be, the action is going to be, nothing about it is either real or even loosely connected to anyone's actual idea of time. There is no time in a Vegas casino. It is always just now. And so
love it.
I like the idea of the Vegas thing as a spectacle. I don't know if I'll like it as a race. I'll wait and see. But I'm okay with them adding that. at least I get the business case prop, you know, reason it's on there, but geez, man.
Stuffy, you, me, plane ride over to Vegas, do a bit of, what's your game?
Plane ride over to Vegas, looking at the prices, my YouTube channel needs to kick off big time to afford those prices.
Stuffy,
over there, or I need to win big.
Exactly.
On blackjack.
You're not thinking this through. We will make the money up when we get there.
Oh, okay. I see your plan. Little hustler. It's just, it's all about money. It's like boxing. Vegas earns considerable amounts of money whenever there's a boxing match on, and it'll be the same for F1. So yeah, it's going to make some rich people a lot richer. Is it going to be good for F1? I don't know. I'm looking at the track map again. I don't know. There's nothing there that really appeals to me. And we've got cars now that can follow a lot closer than previous years. And there's not, I don't know, there's nothing there that really I see we're going to get the thrill that, apart from, as Matt said, maybe some chaos, a red flag or a safety car throws up some interesting stuff for us.
There'll be a safety car, I'm sure.
But actual on-track overtakes, I think it'll be quite boring. It'll just be down that long kind of back straight slash curve. But at least our favourite track is confirmed for another few years, though. Spanners, right in the middle there, Monaco, May the 28th.
Oh, okay, let's come back to that. Let me take a deep breath. Chris?
Oh, yeah, and the same weekend as the Indy 500 as well. My birthday weekend, and that is just a fantastic Sunday for me. But no, I wanted to just clarify. So Saudi Arabia will be remaining at the Jeddah street track that we've had two Grand Prix on. It seems like the plans to move that to a permanent Grand Prix facility have been pushed back a little bit because, well, it actually takes some time to build a racetrack, it turns out. Qatar, that was supposed to be moving to a downtown Doha street track. And it looks like instead they're going to upgrade the LaSalle circuit instead because it's cheaper.
But we like that circuit, so we are okay with that.
It wasn't necessarily the best race in the world, but I think with the 2022 cars, it could be quite good. And in terms of for qualifying, it was mega.
Yeah, well, and one of the interesting things that we don't see on this incredibly lengthy calendar is South Africa, which was all entirely supposed to be there. And I happened to find some information out about that. And apparently the failure of South Africa to be on the calendar was down to the F1-appointed local promoter not delivering on their financial guarantees. But I liked it more because they discuss how many people were involved in this. Because, you know, this is the thing, like how many people, we were arguing about this last week. 7 different organizations were involved in trying to make this one race happen. The FIA, F1, Motorsport South Africa, Kyalama, the South African Government Department of, wait for it, Sport, Arts, Culture, Tourism, local government, and then the local promoter. They all have to be on the same page. Everybody has to get all their various acts together, or your track does not, in fact, get its Grand Prix.
Talking about South Africa, I think one of the only positives about that falling through is that Spa was only renewed because of South Africa falling through. Otherwise, we wouldn't have Spa next year. Now, you can argue that some of the races haven't been that great the last few years, but it just holds a special place in our heart. And it's still one of the oldest tracks around that I think should just always be there in F1.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I think Spa, I don't even think Spa's renewed for 2024. I think that's still in flux. So yeah, that could still be going.
Spa needs to invest in just one, like in tennis at Wimbledon on Centre Court. If it's raining, they just put a big roof over it. If they just do that for Spa, I think we'll be okay, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, for Spa to only have 1 year, they're always very worrying for me, especially when they've just done all these upgrades to the facilities. And, you know, for me, I think most of the recent Spa Grand Prix have been ruined by half the field taking engine penalties. We don't get a proper race out of it. Yeah. But, of course, July 30th, I feel like Spa already announced an event to be taking place on that particular weekend, the Spa 24 Hours, which then had to be pushed back a week.
Yeah, that's rough.
No, you have to do what F1 tells you to.
No, you are absolutely right. How awkward is that?
So, look, on that calendar, I think we could sit and go, which ones would we get rid of? But commercial things are always going to take some precedent over the tracks that we would like. And I think nearly every track that I would point out to get rid of, there's a money reason why it wouldn't be got rid of. Las Vegas as the penultimate race. We've already had to stomach Abu Dhabi as the final race because we had this great tradition of Interlagos finishing off the season. And what I wouldn't give to see Interlagos be the last race in a Formula One season again. But I can't compete with what Las Vegas and Abu Dhabi have to offer.
Because you don't have the money.
No, that's precisely what I was saying. Rubbish. It feels like all my problems could be solved with infinite money. However, in a 24-race season, for ordinary fans who have families, who have other commitments, who can't watch every sprint race, who sometimes have to miss qualifying, and I include myself, if there's a family activity, my family and my wife will not say to me, oh, it's qualifying. Oh, we'll cancel the trip I planned. Oh, I'll tell my sister not to come round with all the family. So still, for me, like qualifying takes, you know, a backseat to other family commitments. For the races, I do get left alone. I have not yet told my wife that there are going to be 24 races next year. So what I will say is that if there is the full 24-race calendar, I am going to miss two races. It's a lot. With the sprint races and everything else, I'm going to take two races. I'm going to pick two races that I'm not going to watch and that I'm going to have this fantastic crew step in and do a good production. If there's 23 races, I'll only miss one. And I'll tell you what that race is going to be. And that is going to be Monaco. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. I am so fed up with Monaco still being on the calendar. It's been renewed for another 3 years. Nothing happens on a Sunday. Everybody sits there and goes, but it's the majestic nature of it. You have to be there. Did you see the time where they nearly touched the barrier, but they didn't quite? I've had enough. I've had enough of sitting through Monaco race weekends. I'm just going to miss that one out.
Okay, you'll happily watch 8 hours of preseason testing for 3 days, but you won't watch the Monaco Grand Prix.
About,
but anyway,
that's expectation management, though. Why do I watch preseason testing?
Well, don't expect anything from the Monaco Grand Prix, then you'll never be disappointed.
I've done that for 2 decades. It's a Grand Prix. It's a race. It's meant to have something happening. I'm fed up of it. I'm fed up of people telling me I'm supposed to enjoy that when you obviously are not going to enjoy that.
Look, Spanners, here's what you tell Mrs. Spanners. You don't tell her it's 24 races or 23 or whatever it is. You just say, oh, yeah, there's an extra race next year. And then it doesn't sound so bad.
I guarantee you, if you skip Monaco, it's going to be the year someone ends up in the harbor again.
Yeah, sure. It rains or something like that. And yeah, there's always the exception that proves the rule, Stuffy.
Like this year's.
Oh, all you need to do in Monaco anyway, Spanners, is check the BBC text on a Saturday evening. Yeah. Whoever's starting first will finish. Unless it's a Ferrari, then they might finish third or fourth, but yes, it's. I agree. It's a track that Formula One has outgrown, and need to change. As I say, with Monaco programs in my background, but it's
you're a shill. Yeah, you're really a shill. There's some suggestions that I'm saying this because I've been secretly offered seats at the Monaco Grand Prix, and I just want the week off of podcasting. It's not true, Chris.
What? Just on the very brief detail about that is, I think, because it's on the calendar, that means that it's no longer sort of controlled and promoted by the Automobile Club de Monaco, and that it's actually Formula One that's going to be taking care of the TV coverage and the promotion and the running and things like this.
So you mean we won't get a Stroll replay when there's one overtake of the whole track?
Oh, that was amazing. Exactly.
You mean we won't get to see that overtake that replay anymore of Stroll?
See, even that was good. Even this season where there was that bit of rain to start with, because there is a reluctance to go out and go around a street track with no runoff when it's pouring with rain, there was a little bit of excitement at the beginning, which quickly settled down into a completely normal Monaco Grand Prix.
No, not just a street car, like any track. You could be in Dubai, or well, not that it ever rains in Dubai, but or Spa, or and one of these circuits, Kota, and they would still sit there for 20 minutes going, oh, now it's still spitting.
Yeah, but Kota can be a Grand Prix without rain, whereas Monaco needs something like that to make it an event. Okay, so let's end this segment and the show by asking our panel which two races that they would miss from the F1 calendar. And look at them Googling F1 2023 calendar. I'll give them some time to find that by saying which ones that I would miss. So obviously Monaco, I'm going to go for that. Just watch it be like the most amazing race somehow. But I doubt it. Let's see. The one I would want to miss probably would be Las Vegas because I know that it's there for commercial reasons. I feel like it's all being tilted towards what the venue and the city can do rather than to a TV audience. I am going to make the second one. Oh, no, they're really close together. I was going to make the second one Miami. And I know that will upset the powers that be because they all listen, don't they? But Miami. So Monaco and Miami, I would give them a miss if I had to miss two. Who's ready? Matt, which two are you missing? If you're not ready, I can say another one.
No, I'm ready. I'm actually trying to decide, am I going to miss them for like reasons of personal convenience or excitement in watching the races? I ditch China and Australia in a heartbeat because they're like at 3 o'clock in the morning for me. But if we're talking about exciting racing, I don't know.
This screams I had the calendar ready to answer this question, by the way.
I did. I've already got mine.
Go ahead then.
Fine, Chris.
You've interrupted. Go ahead.
Yeah, he could do. Right. He could answer it, but he doesn't want to now because of your insulting interruption.
Well, I'll just say, you already said Miami, didn't you?
Yeah.
I think you can agree. Speaks for all of us, really. No one wants Miami back. I don't think it's necessarily ones I would miss, but just ones I want off the calendar, which are Jeddah. That track gives me anxiety.
Mm-hmm. It's dangerous. That's like the most. I thought that was getting replaced, but that track terrifies me as a spectator. And like, I feel like I'm all their mums. You know, I'm just like, no, stop, slow down, just in case there's one round the corner.
Doesn't help. There's missiles being thrown. In the background at oil factories as well.
There's a few of those. I mean, we might not get Azerbaijan for similar reasons as well. And I'm sure Sochi is not going to pop back on the calendar anytime soon. But I feel like those kind of topics are usually a little bit outside of the remit of this show.
Oh, no, Sochi's not. What are we going to do? That great track. Oh, no. The other one is, of course, Abu Dhabi. What a waste of a finale.
All right. Stuffy, then, what are you missing?
I'm going to pick two that none of you have chosen.
Ooh.
And this first one is going to rile up a big proportion of the fan base, and that is Zandvoort.
Not Zandvoort.
Purely for racing,
yeah,
it's just a bit boring. It's like Monaco, whoever's into the first corner. We had the safety car this year throw up. We had the safety car or the Tsunoda situation throw up some interesting.
I do like the track. I have to say, for me,
it's a bit like Monaco. From watching the drivers go around there, like on qualifying on the limit, it's fun to watch. But from a racing perspective, it's just a little bit meh. That's my opinion.
I think Hungaroring is a fairer comparison.
But Hungaroring has been proven to throw up very, very good races. Zandvoort, I know we've only had 2 years, but the 2 years we've had there have been a bit meh for me personally. And then the second one is Mexico. Mexico is another race, but just down into the first corner and then it's over and done with. It's very boring.
But that's so that you know, but both of those tracks are only on the calendar to suit two very specific drivers to cater to their fan bases.
It's like what Spanner said. It was very novel at first. Oh, they're driving for a stadium. And then it's worn off. It's not like they're driving for a stadium at 200 miles an hour. They're driving for a stadium in the stadium, first and second gear, and it's boring.
The stadium is awesome.
I don't doubt that Zandvoort is awesome for a party atmosphere. But for racing, no, that's what I watch F1 for.
I don't know. I like that turn one and then the banked left-hander. Is that turn? No, I think that's turn three. The banked left-hander turn three.
Talking Zandvoort.
Yeah, Zandvoort. Yeah, I think that's one of the best corners on the calendar.
Yeah, but it's just a bit boring. Watching qualifying was great because they're on the edge and you going back to iRacing, like you drive it and it's like, oh, this is really good to drive. Yeah. But actually racing, it's boring. The two races that we've had there anyway, and it's only due to a safety car that threw up anything interesting.
And with Mexico City, ironically, the thing that is the big feature, the stadium, is the thing that kills the racing around that track. So didn't it used to go outside of the stadium and
Bring
then go
back
down
Errol
that?
Talda.
So before the stadium existed, it used to be just one long sweeping right-hander from before where they turned right to go into the stadium, now all the way through to the start. Yeah. Finish straight. It's an unbelievably fast right-hander, but they can't do it now because there's a stadium and roads and stuff. But...
Yeah.
They all get oversteered, don't they, out of the stadium. And then they can't, even with DRS, get down into the first corner.
Yeah, it's the concertina effect, isn't it? Mm. Because the DRS is already not so powerful because they're at X thousand meters. There's no air, so there's no slipstream, and these cars aren't very good with DRS to begin with anyway. It's just going to be an absolute disaster, I think.
And Matt, that's you finally. And I know you were all over this, but the other two, just too impetuous. But now, which two races would you miss?
Oh, which two races would I miss? If it was all about the racing?
Yes.
I think Abu Dhabi would be one of them. And Monaco would be the other.
Monaco and Abu Dhabi. Chris.
So, Chris Fonseca, can we bring back Malaysia? Yes, please. Yes, can we? Yes. That was such a great track.
Oh, I've just realised that Istanbul isn't on there. So of the COVID rescue tracks, I think that a lot of those deserved at least a spot on the rotation. So Mugello.
Yeah, 100%.
And go on. Didn't Turkey resurface their whole track because they knew F1 was coming, or was that before?
No,
well, they did it for F1, but it was not up to snuff.
And it was no.
Oh, yeah, it was super slippery, wasn't it?
It hadn't been on for long enough, so a lot of the resin was coming to the surface, and it was super slippery. And didn't Portugal have a similar issue as well?
I don't think it was anywhere near as bad. Actually, you bring up Portugal. I would love to see Portimao back on the calendar.
Yeah, so Portimao, Mugello, Istanbul all came to the aid of F1 during the global pandemic, and only Imola has survived, hasn't it, out of those rescue tracks?
Yeah, arguably the worst one.
It's there for its history, I think. Yeah. We argue about tracks being there for their history, but Imola is probably
too small, it's too tight. It is a great track. It is too small for modern F1.
If they want another Italian track, it should be Mugello.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, that was a good chat. And I regret instantly saying that I'm going to miss a race next season, because I just feel like it's going to be the one, isn't it? Like one in eight Monacos is interesting. This is going to be the one. I'm going to stick to my guns. I'm not doing the Monaco race review and not watching it either. I might watch the live timing, as Stuffy suggests. So please do go and follow our special guest here, Stuffy, on his YouTube stream, on his Twitch channel, and on his TikTok.
TikTok and YouTube.
Okay, we'll put all the links in the show notes below so you can see it. Go and check him out. It's therapeutic watching someone driving very fast but being very calm. And he's an Essex boy as well, after my own blood. So that's a reason to go and follow him. Go and follow Chris Stevens at Chris on Racing on Twitter.
And Instagram and TikTok.
You've got an Instagram?
Yeah, man.
Is it mostly of your cat?
Yes, there are pictures of my cat usually on my story. There's pictures of adventures that I go on. So, yeah.
It's good. Some adventures. I swashbuckling. Yeah. Follow mine.
Yeah, exactly.
Search for Spanners Ready, I think, on Instagram. You can see my Instagram as well. You can see me walking my cat, because that's a thing I do. I didn't think I was ever going to be the walking the cat guy. But turns out I am. Matt Two Rumpets at MattPT55 on Twitter.
Always amazed you remember that.
Yeah, because you've said it once and like you've told me the story about how it's to do with like a bike cog or something, and it just stuck in my head. But it's not a very good Twitter handle. You should find some version of Trumpets or Matt Trumpets and just change it.
Yeah.
Do it. Do it now. You've only got like 8 followers. If you had Trumpets, people would go, you're the guy from Missed Apex.
I actually put that not in the handle, but in the other bit that goes next to the handle, so people searching could find it.
Not good enough. And that's why I say to everyone, you should follow me at Spanners Ready, because I'm the best one. And you can also follow me on Instagram. I'm Richard Ready on Facebook. I have got a TikTok as well. You can search for Spanners Ready on there. And if you like what we're doing and you want to encourage this kind of thing, tell your friends and consider supporting us at patreon.com/missedapex. There's a recent patron pod that's just gone up. It's an hour of worst content of me and Matt and Alex Van Gene taking live calls from our patrons in our Slack group. It was a lot of fun, but it's, you know, it's not as serious and F1-y as this. But wherever we see you next, which I suspect will be tech time, Matt, is there a tech time brewing?
Potentially we have one for next week. Yes.
And then we'll be here for the Singapore Grand Prix race review. But until we see you next, work hard, be kind, and have fun. This was Missed Apex Podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.